when, according to the figures being flashed on the board, that candidate may be behind. I pointed that out to the president, and I said that and as his strength would be in the small towns and rural areas to wait and not to jump to a conclusion. And the president's reply was that I was right, that he understood that, and that was best illustrated by Michigan, as he had no doubt whatever that he would carry Michigan, whatever the board showed on votes, and that that's undoubtedly what was happening in Michigan. I think it was interesting. Maybe it was because he was hoarse or because he's that kind of a man. He really didn't say a great deal all evening. It was very interesting, except when he had a decision to make, like the two that I've described, he didn't say much. His expression was more than anything, and I was deeply impressed as a human being with his seeming gratitude that there was a pro around like myself who knew what to ask and knew what to say, and that his great congressional experience gave him the same kind of profound appreciation for sheer professionalism that I had, and that he was so pleased that I was there, not because, you know, we're particularly close friends or anything like that. We're not. But that he felt that I knew, I understood, that he didn't have to write me a story, and that I knew what to do in a given situation, just as he would. But he's not a man who believes you can be your own lawyer. So it was more his expression, his demeanor, his outlook, than the matters I can quote. He didn't make any extended statement of any kind. The longest sentence he uttered was what I've just said about the big city vote coming in first in industrial states. In a very personal and congenial way, and the only one who really expressed any political view was the cheerleader, Garagiola, who led a big cheer. People applauded and cheered whenever a state turned blue. And when it was red, there were no boos and there was no dismaying catcall. It was just nothing. But when it turned blue, there was a big cheer, especially when Michigan turned blue, aside from the early bird, to wit Kansas, which was the first state recorded, as I recall it now. When Massachusetts came on for Carter, the president said, well, that's no surprise. So, you know, there's no, he fully expected. And he said probably the same thing about the South, except for Texas. And I think he was very pleased that Virginia went for him, though it hung on for a long, long time. The relation of Mrs. Ford to the president was strictly one of personal affection, solicitude, that he was warm, that his seat was okay, that he had a drink, that he had some food, but no show of emotion of any kind or character. The only time emotion showed was in the first greeting when he hugged his wife very sincerely, and in the last, and the last scene is very worth describing. Cheney and Tita came back. It was along about 3 a.m. And we went into the same room, dining room again, and they said, obviously, Mr. President, you're not going to know anything until morning. Hawaii is hanging fire, and Oregon is hanging fire, Ohio is hanging fire. We really can't tell what will be the conclusion. And the president said, well, I guess we'd better go to bed then. And they said, that is, Tita said, well, I guess that's about all you can really do. And the president said, I wish you'd come out and tell what you've told me to the whole group. So Tita did come out and stand in front of the television set in that living room and repeated exactly, he really did exactly what he had told the president. And the president's comment was, well, wouldn't it be funny if the predictions made by many of the commentators came true and we had to wait for Hawaii's four votes to decide this election. And period. No response by anybody. And the president then got up, stood up in the room next to Teeter, and said, well, I guess there's nothing, I'm going to go to bed. He just said those words. I'm going to go to bed now. Perfectly matter of fact. And then everybody hugged and kissed everybody else. I mean, you know, I did Mrs. Ford, and I said goodnight to everybody. And went downstairs, and everybody else drifted out. Some, as a matter of fact, drifted out even before I did. I sort of hung back if the president had another thought that he, you know, wanted to share. By that time, the networks were carrying about 220-odd electoral votes the network. CBS was carrying Carter within 6 votes of victory, and the others were carrying at about 220-something, with the president at around 130. And lots of the comments on the television at that time is still lots of wide open space. It's still anybody's race except Cronkite, who said that in order for the president to win, he'd have to carry everything there is on the board open now. The others did not, only Cronkite. But the president had no reaction to that whatever, except I'm going to go to bed, after having heard that his men considered it inconclusive. Well, by the time I got from the White House to the Sheraton Park, where I'd been invited to a chairman's party given by Rogers Morton and Max Fisher and Jim Baker, etc. By the time I got there, they were all gone and broken up, and the minute I walked into my own door at Watergate, which was 4:45, Jimmy Carter was on the TV claiming victory. And the report was the president had gone to bed, is asleep. Now, I may have other recollections now that my recollections have been stimulated, but this is the story of the night. The kids were not in evidence, and insofar as they were in evidence, it was the same thing. Perhaps in the bedroom after everybody left, they talked to their father, you know, with some premonition of his defeat, but there was not a single evidence of despair or dismay or consolation, because the president went to bed and announced he was going to bed at a time when he was still not defeated, even though the only commentator that I heard to it, Cronkite, was saying, well, he'd have to carry everything there is, and that's hardly likely, but it's still possible. None whatever. It was the most contained and the most matter-of-fact gathering, even at that point, but warm and personal. The person who looked the most dismayed was Joe Garagiola. It was written all over his face that, you know, he was very unhappy because things didn't look so good. I'd like to add one other thing, which is probably the most important thing that happened that night. When Teeter had read this to the group, and just before the president said, I'm going to bed, I said to the president, Mr. President, can I have a word with you? And he walked to the other end of the room, at which I joined him. And I said, Mr. President, things don't look so good. He said, I guess they don't, Jack. I said, but we don't know yet. But I said, I'd like to leave one thing with you early on. Do not relinquish the leadership of this party. Not for you, and not even for the party, but for our country. Please don't do it. Don't even consider it. He said, don't worry, Jack. I won't. I have this very clearly in mind.